All right, welcome to the Sports Ethos Los Angeles Chargers podcast. I'm here with Brandon, who is happy the Yankees made the World Series, but isn't feeling 100%. How are you doing, man?
It's not just that, Rob. Yes, I am not. It is true. I'm not feeling 100%. I should be better soon.
But yeah, the sniffles are going through, but you'll be all right.
Yep, but not just Yankees. Big weekend for me. Oregon won. Eagles won. I mean, Devils didn't win, but at least they got a point out of it.
Liberty won a chip as well. Just now, that was a great game.
Great. I love it.
Good stuff. Shane, how are you doing this fine weekend?
You know, not bad. I'm surviving through the windstorm that we had. It's over now, but
yeah, it kept going on my I was upstairs doing my fan I was doing a fantasy basketball draft while watching the Niners game today. And I just hear poof,
poof, like shut poof. Up.
Yeah, it was rough. What's probably gonna be even rougher is the post credit scene that we're gonna do today. Talking about Venom 2, but we'll get to that in short order. We'll begin with Jets Steelers. And Brandon, you brought this up to me, and I feel like it's important for you to bring this up to Shane, because I think Shane will have a better context than I will on this, but we were thinking about the similarities between both the Jets and the Steelers over the last 5 to 10 years. Talk about your thought process on that, because I think that's an interesting starting point for the show today.
Yeah. Because the more I watch these two teams, the more I'm just like, these two teams have played football pretty much the exact same way for like the last decade or so. I mean, look at the end of Big Ben's tenure. Couldn't really throw the ball anymore. Not, you know, not great mobility. Having to, you know, over-rely on the run game to try to, you know, get their offense to move. Underutilizing good wide receivers. And then relying on a great defense to bail them out in big spots and to win games. Look at the Jets. You now have an old, immobile quarterback, cannot throw the ball anymore. You have good receivers that you can't get the ball to, have to rely on the run game to get the ball moving, and have a defense that is too damn tired to keep bailing you out every game. And the thing is, you know, even before that, I mean, Zach Wilson, not good. Mark Sanchez, not good. You know, let me look at the Steelers. You know, you have Russell Wilson now, not good. Justin Fields, but not great. Ben Roethlisberger at the end of his career, not good. They're both same even to their coaching staffs, defensive coaches that don't really know how to put their teams in the best situations to succeed. Both of them, the past 10 years, like. These two franchises are more similar than we think. It's funny because one is one of the winningest franchises in the NFL history, and one is the complete opposite. So it's funny, but I just think they're very similar in many ways. So and tonight, for the most part, until the Steelers pulled away, but by the time the Steelers pulled away, the game was over anyway. So, I mean, the last few drives really didn't matter. This game wasn't good. It was 15-13 halftime.
I'm gonna be real. We were watching the Liberty game for like the first maybe 2.5 quarters because the game was so boring.
Yeah. So, I mean, what does that tell you? Between that and how these two teams just to me seem so similar, I mean that speaks for itself.
Shane, do you agree with that sentiment? Because I think it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the thing is, like, they have similarities, but the difference is one of them is a fairly well-run organization, whereas the other has no idea what they're doing, you know? And that's that's on full display if, you know, you look at the last 10 years, like, well, one of them has made the playoff year, and the other has not made it since 2010. So, and it's not that they don't get good players. I mean, Jets roster right now is not really that bad. It's just that, you know, poor management, not getting guys at the right time, all sorts of factors. Yeah, that's an interesting thought, though, for sure.
What's another interesting thing that we're going to go on here with the biggest game of the week, the Chiefs and the Niners, a rematch of the Super Bowl. We're going to do quarterback corner for two guys that we should know a good bit about, but also had a really rough day today. Shane, what were your thoughts on both Purdy and Mahomes' performances, not only today, but throughout the season?
Yeah, I mean, so far this year, Mahomes has not looked great. He hasn't been bad per se, but he doesn't, you know, normally he can really elevate his team, and this year it kind of feels like he's just been, you know, skating by, getting them wins, but not doing much else. And it's his fault necessarily, because, you know, his tight end, who has been his number one target his whole career, is, I mean, let's face it, at this point, he's washed. And, or not washed, but he's not what he was. Let's put it that way. And, you know, they don't really have any great receiving targets. I mean, they got Rashee Rice, he's out right now. And, of course, they got Hollywood Brown, he's also out right now. It's just, you know, and they're rolling with Kareem Hunt as the number one back. So, you know, he doesn't have much help. But the fact that the team is still winning is, you know, it says a lot about, I think, Andy Reid more than anything, mm-hmm. and the rest of the coaching staff, and that defense especially. You know, let's put it this way. If defense was playing this year, you know, the way that they did like 3 or 4 years ago before they were really like elite, this team would probably be 3-3 right now. With the way that this offense has been. And Mahomes today, I mean, he had no touchdowns, 2 picks, and Purdy wasn't much better. You know, no touchdowns, 3 picks. And, you know, we were talking about earlier that the key to stopping Purdy, and I don't know why more people don't do this, because this is what Steve Spagnuolo, the Chiefs defensive coordinator, this is what he's done twice now when they've played, and it works really well.
He's lit him up.
You blitz the hell out of him.
Yep, yeah, lit him up. Exactly.
Because, you know, the truth is, I mean, Niners, yeah, they got Trent Williams, great left tackle, but the rest of that offensive line, it's not great. So you can load up the box on the right side or on the strong side, that's, you know, you get all that pressure coming in over there. I mean, you got Chris Jones, Karlaftis, really good rushers. And the thing is, because everyone's always afraid to blitz, because they're like, well, you know, that only leaves 5 guys to drop back and bend the pass, or maybe 6, whatever. It's like, yeah, but do the Niners throw deep? No. So you
just that quick, just the quick no.
Yeah, I mean, so all you need really is 5 guys to just kind of stay in that short medium area. You don't need four DBs dropping back in zone. Like that's not what they're gonna do. And I think, you know, Spags understands that. And ultimately, this is part of the reason San Francisco's 3-4 right now. But it seems like Ayuk might be out for a while, like possibly
the year is what I'm hearing at the moment. Yeah,
which would be a huge blow for the Niners. And because they don't have Debo at the moment either, so he might be back sooner than later.
Debo just has an illness, so probably next week, but yeah.
Okay, yeah. But still, I mean, you know, we talked about it before. Like, we see what happens when the Niners lose some of their key guys. It doesn't go well. And that's, you know, we started to see that today.
Yeah.
Next, let's see. Who does San Francisco play next?
Cowboys, Sunday Night Football.
Oh God.
Immediately you're like,
after
oh.
Sunday night. After two. Yeah, that's.
Brandon, what are your thoughts on these two quarterbacks this season?
I mean, I've talked about Brock Purdy. I know everybody, you know. I'm not the only one that has this take, but it's the only thing I think of when I see him. And and you guys know what I'm going to say. Game manager. He does not, like Shane was saying, he does. He just doesn't, because we were texting about this even during the game. Brock Purdy does not elevate your team to another level to win a game. He's never going to be the reason you win a Super Bowl. I firmly believe that. Listen, he could prove us all wrong and do it. He's still so young, you know. His story is great. I'm not knocking the guy, but there's so many people that call him elite, and he is not. And you know, like Mahomes has done it before, so Mahomes' struggles are surprising. But look, Mahomes is very weird to me this year. He's making mistakes that he's really never made at any point in his career so far.
He looks sloppy.
I'm not understanding, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't he lead the league in interceptions right now?
Mahomes does currently.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
that's hilarious.
And you know, like, and it's crazy. After the game, you know, he's sitting there with Aaron Andrews talking to her, and he's getting all, like she's basically fawning over him. He's getting praise. I'm like, bro, he sucked today. That defense won the game. Like, well, why are we sitting here interviewing him? Go interview guys that actually contributed to this win, not him. Like,
yeah. And then it cracked me up because posted that video of his touchdown run and said Mahomes magic, and I was like, well, can we stop the meat riding for this guy? Like,
bro, it was just a simple touchdown run. Like, what are we doing?
I don't know. It's like, yeah, we see quarterback do that every week and no one ever talks about it, but Mahomes doesn't. It's like, oh my God, amazing.
Like
what are we doing?
It's just Like I look at those two guys and I'm just, I mean, this year, Mahomes is not impressive. You know, I mean, he's not playing well at all, and Purdy has not. My mind has not changed about him. I mean, like I said, and I told you this 2022. I said it last season. I'll say it again now. Until he does something that changes my mind, I cannot believe anything different. I mean, you know, we always talk about how certain, like, and I don't know if this is just the bias, but everybody's like, oh, well, Jalen Hurts has to have talent to bail him out. I'm like, Brock Purdy loses even one remotely good player and falls apart. Like, Brock Purdy needs the perfect offense to succeed. We've seen this year after year now. This is going into, you know, year three of this, where, you know, I mean, and his second full season, where he loses even one good player and he falls apart.
So here's something I'll say to this, Brandon, because you and I have had this Brock Purdy debate for a long time. And hearing you say this on the pod and kind of sitting back and thinking about how this game went, the more and more I'm thinking you're correct. Because, like, I look at that game today and I sit there going, what Shane said, all they're doing, like, from snap one, all Spags did was blitz his ass. Literally.
Yep.
Snap one. Yep. And then once I saw that, I was like, okay, yikes, this is going to get ugly. And then Ayuk goes down. You know, Debo leaves with the illness, and you're like, oh, this is getting worse and worse and worse. So, like, I think you both are onto something with this team that can rear its ugly head, whether it's in the conference title game or especially in the Super Bowl, that is really scary, if not earlier.
Yeah. And you know what it is, too? Like, of course, you know, a lot of quarterbacks, I mean, he's lost so much this season in terms of his weapons. And I mean, any even decent quarterback would struggle. Elite, it could be Tom Brady, it could be anybody. If you lose any one of your weapons, especially when you lose like four of them pretty much for an extended period of time, yeah, I mean, you're not in a good spot to succeed. You're not supposed to. But I struggle with the fact that even when his weapons were in there, he wasn't able to elevate that offense to win games based on his performance. Because you know who does that really well, no matter if they're missing one receiver or even if they have all their guys, whatever it may be? Josh Allen can win games by himself. Joe Burrow can win games by himself. Patrick Mahomes, even though he struggled this year, has won games by himself. Jalen Hurts, I know people, listen, I will talk about my quarterback, but Jalen Hurts has won games by himself. So,
a couple times, but that's it.
Yeah, like, but those four guys, I mean, there's more. Lamar Jackson has even, you know, won games with his legs, like, multiple times. Like, Brock Purdy has done it maybe a couple, but he's not a guy that will do it when it matters most. He'll do it in like a random week three or week nine game, something right. Like that. He won't do it in the playoffs or a Super Bowl. It's not going to happen. So, like, you know, I'm not bagging on him. I love his story. I love the mist, but like, there's a reason there's a reason he's Mr. Irrelevant. The reason why he wasn't the first or second rounder. I think this is his ceiling. I don't think he's better than this. Like, is he better than what they've had in recent memory? Oh, 100%. I'm not doubting that at all. But what he is right now, that is his ceiling. And I don't think he gets more than that. And then Mahomes, you want to believe Mahomes will figure it out. But, you know, because I don't want to talk about Purdy too much. But you want to believe Mahomes will figure it out. And the thing is, you just feel like he will. I mean, that team is 6-0 because of their defense. So, and that's when Mahomes playing the worst football of his career. And yet, you just know at some point, the light bulb is going to come on because it's just that's who they are. Like, you know, what's crazy with this Chiefs team in general reminds me of? And once again, I'm going to bring up my Eagles one more time. I know people are sick of that, but this makes sense to me in my head when I think about it. Because I know Chiefs fans know Andy Reid. I know Andy Reid. This reminds me a lot of the McNabb era Eagles, where it was nothing but defense. Your good quarterback had no help offensively, but wasn't playing good football. But your defense kept winning games. and you kept finding ways to win. And then by the end of the season, you found yourself just like Andy Reid would find himself with the Eagles in the NFC Championship game or with the Super Bowl against the Patriots he did one year. It feels like the same thing that's happening this year with the Chiefs. I mean, Mahomes is far better than anything Donovan McNabb could ever be. But at that time, McNabb was one of the top five quarterbacks in football. And, you know, you have obviously a top three to five quarterback right now who is struggling. Defense has to win games. And it's not pretty, but they're finding ways to win. But the thing is, you know, sometimes you don't always need that. We talked about them, last year? Remember last year with the Chiefs? We were like, oh, Travis Kelce, down year, no receiving. Still had a good defense. Mahomes played well, and that's what won it. But I don't know. Like, you want to believe that they'll turn it on, and him especially, he'll turn it on. But let's just say he doesn't. I don't think they can win a Super Bowl if he doesn't get back to what he is.
No, I don't think so at all. I don't think so at all either. Let's actually move on to your Eagles, Brandon, really quickly, because actually, Shane, do you want to finish up on Mahomes real quick before we do that?
I was just going to say, you know who it also reminds me of is the last, 5 years of the New England dynasty?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%.
Kind of past his prime at that point. He had a great tight end. He was also kind of on the decline. And, you know, Julian Edelman is your one. Like, really? Nothing against Edelman, but, you know. But then come playoffs, they just turn it on. It's like, where did this come from, you know?
Yeah.
When most people are tired and broke down and whatever, they're like, all right, here we go. But yeah. Anyways, Eagles.
Eagles. So this is gonna be the quickest Eagles thing we've ever done, Brandon, because
that's fine.
That Saquon Barkley game is the single funniest thing about this season so far. Bro, John Mara is not only he's not gonna be able to sleep for 5 weeks after this performance, Brandon, because he put on a show, and you know, I mean, he said, you know, it's a media thing, and that's part of it, okay? He has respect for them, they have respect for him, that's there too. But between those white lines, and you know we talk about this all the time, between the white lines, it clearly was personal, and he dominated.
Oh, yeah. Because players will always say that it's not a personal thing, I mean, but he made it pretty clear, even on social media, he made it pretty clear that he felt disrespected. Yeah, I mean, pretty much the last couple of years, not even just during the offseason, the last couple of years, he felt disrespected by the Giants. And you're damn right he was. I mean, you know, Giants fans are very funny when it comes to this because they're like, oh, Daniel Jones sucks, but I'd still rather pay him than Saquon Barkley. I'm like, well, you're a moron. You know, they're like, oh, he always gets hurt. I'm like, he gets hurt because the rest of your team sucks. You have a bottom five offensive line. Like, it's like no running back. I don't care if it's Barry Sanders. No running back is surviving that. Plus with that turf in MetLife, which of course, like I said, I live 15 minutes from it. Dump. But what he did today, I mean, 17 carries, 176 yards. And the thing is, he would have had a passing TD had Jalen Hurts saw him on that route out of the backfield. So he would have had, you know, a 200-plus yard day. I mean, come on, man. You can't ask for anything better than that against your former team. And, like, it's a division game. That game, I think, sealed the Giants' fate this season. So I love it even more. So you not only did their former player bury them, their biggest rival buried them. So that's – couldn't ask for much better from him today.
Shane, any thoughts?
You know, it's funny. I just there's probably no way this ever happens, but it would just be hilarious. If the Giants continue to have this awful season, they fire Brian Daboll, and then he goes to the Eagles after they fire Sirianni. Oh, that would be great. I would love that. But anyways.
Here's the statistic of the season really quick, because this is going to lean into what you're saying about this being really funny, Shane. Touchdowns at MetLife Stadium. The Giants have played 4 games there this year. They only have 1. Saquon played 1 game there, and he has 1. There you go. Continue, Shane.
Amazing. Well, that was it. That was my thought.
That was it? Listen, yeah. Dude, I just got to finish with this.
I'm just saying, like, you know, you see, like, we've seen what Brian Daboll can do with tall, strong, fast quarterbacks. Josh Allen, right? I'm just saying, you give him Jalen Hurts, like, look out.
if that happens, Brandon's going to lose his mind on this podcast before next season even starts.
Yeah. Not even a question.
Dog, that was the funniest thing I've seen in a while on a football field. And just seeing him ball out like that was incredible.
He's not even, and here's a little fun fact about that game too. That is not the highest, and I don't know if it's in terms of running back, or I think it's just in any player against their former team. He's the second highest, like, yard total, like basically dominant game, I think, in terms of total yards or in terms of rushing yards for a player. Do you know who the first one was?
Is it another Eagle?
It's not another Eagle. It's not even close to another Eagle.
Okay. I can't think of it, Shane.
Give me, like, a year.
This is going back. We were very, very young. This goes back to 2009.
Why? Okay, can I ask a question? Why is everything this week 2009 based? Yankees, 2009. Other random thing. There's like all these 2009 parallels this week.
It's a sign.
What team?
This is a... Well... Put it this way, it's not the two teams in the same division. So it includes one AFC North team and one NFC North team.
AFC North. Brett Favre?
No.
No. What position?
Running back.
This is a running back.
Matt Forte?
No, but it includes the Bears.
It includes the Bears. Oh, my Lord.
Think about...
DeAndre Swift? Obviously not, right?
But think about... Okay, so, I mean, we've all played Madden. Think about, like, those kinds of running backs in, like, 08, 09, around that era.
Adrian Peterson?
No.
It can't be AP.
That was Vikings.
Yeah. I'm out.
So was he on the Bears in 2009?
He beat the Bears in 2009. That was his former team. He beat the Bears. And they didn't just beat them; they smacked the crap out of them.
I don't know.
Give us the answer.
Well, I'll give you one more hint. One more, real quick. He was on the Bengals in this year. The Bengals beat the Bears 45-10 in this game.
He was on the Bengals.
The Bengals.
Oh, jeez. Bengals running. Old Bengals running backs or older Bengals running backs.
Yep. Because they mentioned it on the broadcast today on Fox. So that's why I was.
Oh, I like it. I like that. By the way, the Fox broadcast was great today for that game. They did a great job.
Oh, yeah.
And Adam Amin, really quick. Adam Amin and Greg Olsen. Adam Amin has done a great job filling in for Joe Davis. I just got to quickly say that. So good. I don't know. I'm losing it. I don't know.
Yeah, Joe Davis was there. Was there with us in spirit. That's because of another Eagles win. But all right. So Shane, do you give in to?
I'm trying to think. What's his face? Benson?
Yes. Cedric Benson.
I would never have gotten that. Never. Wow.
Cedric Benson put up against that Bengals Bears game, against that Bears D, he put up 189 yards and a touchdown.
Wow.
So yeah, he absolutely destroyed them.
Jesus. Wow. Shane, you had an idea. All you phrased to us in the chat was, I have an idea that I want to bring up on the show. Give us the context. Give us what this idea is, because I'm really fascinated. You gave us, like, no context, pretty much.
All right. So, as I was watching the Jets tonight, and I saw Davante Adams looking sad on the sideline, going, man, why did I want to go here? It got me thinking. There's quite a few teams in the NFL that are just awful. And they have been forever. And they probably always will be, because they're poorly run. And or, you know, lack of fan interest. Whole assortment of things.
Whole nine, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, I was like, there are a lot of... It seems like there are a lot of good players on bad teams. And in that same vein, a lot of teams that it's like, it seems like it's hard for them to find a starter for this position because they're like on some garbage team just being wasted or, you know. And I was like, you know, what if the NFL went back to 30 teams? And I know this would never happen, but I mean, you know, MLB has 30, NBA has 30. Does NHL have 30?
We bumped it up. We're at 32 as well. Vegas and and Seattle. We were at 30.
Okay. Well, never mind then. But anyways, I was thinking about it. It's like, what two teams could you get rid of that are just historically awful and probably always will be, and nobody really cares about them? And you know, the two that came to mind were the Panthers and the Jags.
Can I actually throw out another nominee? And this is really important. Can we get rid of the Cleveland Browns? I'm so tired of the Cleveland Browns.
No,
I'm so tired of the Haslams messing up the team, being garbage.
I mean, I agree, but that's, sports are very popular, especially football up in that area. So, I'm like, you can't, like, you know, Jacksonville, literally nobody gives a shit about that team.
Watch, like, Jacksonville isn't.
Speaking of that, I'll add to your Jacksonville point, Shane. You go to a Jags game to go in the pool at the top of the stadium. That's what you go to a Jags game for.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, there's a reason they play two games every year in London, because they're not popular enough in Jacksonville. So they got to get the hell out of there. Even though Jacksonville is, I believe, the eighth most populated city in the country, which a lot of people don't realize that, because it's, you know, it's like, I mean, when you think of Florida, it's like the fourth city you think of, but it's the most popular city in Florida. And it, anyways,
I'll be really honest here too. If it wasn't for football, I don't think I would know that Jacksonville is a city.
There you go.
I'll be real.
So, but then I was like, well, okay. So then you take all these players who are left over on those teams, and then the remaining 30 teams do a draft. like to take up those guys. So, you know, like, let's say the, you know, the Patriots end up getting the first pick or whatever.
You know who they're taking? I have the perfect player that goes number one. And this is going to sound really stupid, but if you really think about what this kid is doing this year as a rookie, it makes a lot of sense. The player that goes number one is Brian Thomas Jr. I mean, yeah, bro, the dude's a rookie, and he's doing this. I mean, it's ridiculous. With Trevor Lawrence, who can't even really find him half the time. It's insane. Like, watching Jacksonville the last 2 weeks, right, in London, because I've been the person here that have subjected myself to watching them in London and taking naps during those games because, Jesus, they're boring. But I've watched them in full for 2 weeks. Brian Anderson gets open with incredible ease. It's insane. It's incredible. It's unflipping believable, dude. He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Brian Thomas, excuse me if I said but Anderson.
Real quick, if you take his number, I mean, this is just hypothetical. If you take his current numbers right now, he is on pace, I mean, probably to be the offensive rookie of the year. He's going to hit almost 1,300 yards receiving. He's going to have over 1,250 yards receiving, and he's going to have 6 touchdowns on a garbage team. So
it's kind of, well, yeah, except Jaden Daniels, but.
No, he's going to be number two on every ballot is basically what I'm saying.
He'd be in the running.
It's, yeah, it's like CJ Stroud and Puka Nacua last year, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
But anyways.
No, I think it's an interesting thought. I really do.
Because then the other thing you have to think about is you'd have to... You'd have to reorganize it so that it's AFC or NFC East, Central, and West, as opposed to North and South.
This is what the NHL did. This is what the NHL did with the damn Metropolitan Division. Do you remember that, Brandon?
Yeah.
When they did, this is what the NHL did with the Metro.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, the AFC East, or maybe you get rid of the Jets because they suck too. Instead of the Jags, or I don't know. Yeah, at least the Jags have London. Then you'd have like AFC East. You'd have Bills, Patriots, Dolphins, and then like maybe Steelers, Ravens, right? And then AFC Central. Then you would have Browns, Bengals, and then, I guess, Jags. They got to be thrown in there somewhere. And then it would be, and then Titans, Colts.
No, you have to get rid of the Jags, dude. You have to get rid of the Jags. Like, you just can't, yeah, well, man. Like,
either way. And then AFC West, you have Chiefs, Chargers, Raiders, Broncos, just like it is now, except you throw Houston in there as well.
Wow. Okay. That's fun.
And then, like, the NFC East. You'd have, you know, the 4 teams that are already in it: Giants, Eagles, Commanders, Cowboys, and then you throw in, you know, maybe the Bucks.
Yeah, it's fun. That's really fun. I like it, I'm gonna bait the hell out of people with this episode. NFL 30 teams? ?
And then NFC Central would be, I guess, like the 4 North teams and then Atlanta, I guess, which is kind of weird, but whatever. And then,
technically, wait, if you realign to the NFC Central, I mean, couldn't you put technically the Cowboys, because they don't play anywhere near the East Coast?
No, I was thinking about that, because. Or I would make it. I would make them NFC West, actually, probably.
Yeah.
Because that's their. But then I was thinking about it. I was like, but then you get rid of that division rivalry with the Eagles and the Giants, which is like.
Yeah, you know what this makes me think of, Shane?
That's a classic rivalry.
You know what this makes me think of? So this was a few years back, and it always gets brought up every offseason. You know how, like, in the NBA, especially, I think the NBA and the NHL are like this a lot, Brandon, and you can back me up on this, where it's like, it's a random Wednesday. Here's this random topic for you to think about, just because we have nothing to talk about. The NFL's random topic in the middle of the offseason, it was brought up by this guy. I think he went to Stanford or Harvard. Either it was an Ivy League school or Stanford, some pretty prestigious school. And he came up with this really interesting, like, mathematical equation. When we get to the off season, remind me to talk about this actually, because it's more of an
Oh,
off season topic.
realigning the divisions.
Realigning the
That's
divisions
right.
based on, like, geographic basis. And it reminds me so much of that. We'll have to get back to that in the off season, because that's an off season we're bored topic, but it is interesting. It reminds me so much of that.
So then, then the NFC West would be like the NFC West. It is now plus, I guess, the Saints, which is a little strange, but they're like the furthest West team that remains. So, anyways,
No,
I just had this I just had this idea, and I just thought it was funny.
I
It's
think it's
just.
really I think it's a really fun one, especially considering how even the games are going this year, and you're thinking about rivalries, and you think about players on bad teams, like it adds all these different pieces. I think it's really interesting. Brandon, what are your
Or
thoughts on
hell,
it?
why not? Or why stop at 30? Why not go to like 24?
Oh my God. Can okay, can wait, wait, wait. Can I call time out really quick and put this as an off season we figured this out topic?
Because I'm just
Because
saying,
I want to add this.
then it would be six divisions of four. You know what I mean? So like, yeah.
Jesus. Brandon, what are your overall thoughts on this? Because this is actually really interesting.
I mean, the more, at some point, because the NFL has, I mean, when was the last NFL like realignment of the 90s, early
The
2000s?
last technical realignment was Houston, because Houston, the Texans came in the league in 02.
Okay, so yeah, that's what I thought. Early 2000s. So, but before that, like when you look at like back to like the 50s, 60s, 70s, like they were realigning quite often because it just they were evolving and things like that, and the game wasn't quite as popular yet, over baseball and all this kind of stuff. But I mean, at some point, I feel like there's gonna be realignment, but not to like the tried and true divisions. So not the AFC North, not the NFC East. Not I don't even think the NFC West would get realigned. Like I don't know. I wonder if like remember we were joking around about like oh what would happen if you relegate if there was like a relegation thing where you could relegate like the Panthers or Jets to like the XFL.
Yeah, and put like the St. Louis Renegades up or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, the Battle Hawks or something
The
like
no, it
that.
was the Battle Hawks. Yeah.
It's like, it's funny, but it's like not honestly, like at least it would keep things interesting.
Yeah,
Like
it's a thought, but it's a thought, but the thing is, I think what we have learned in watching spring ball, like spring football, is that
oh, it's bad.
the talent drop off between the NFL and the now USFL is inc the talent drop off is immense. Like
It's not even
it's
it's not even that. It's the drop off from NFL starters to backups.
Yeah,
It's crazy. I mean, seriously, it is. Like
no, for sure, for
most of
sure.
the time you see
Oh,
backups in the game and you're like, wow, he's terrible. I mean, he's obviously not terrible. He's way better than any of us will ever be, but
oh, Jesus.
by comparison, So
Yeah, definitely.
that's where my neighbor brought up an interesting point today. He's a Dolphins fan. We were watching that last drive the Dolphins had, and I was like, Tim Boyle, I get you're a backup, but you've been in this league long enough.
He's a third string, by the way. Let's he's a third string.
Yeah, but the thing is, you spend more time honestly reviewing film and holding a clipboard and reviewing situations than even the starter probably does. Like you have to know when you come into a game what you are expected to do, what you're asked to do, all these different things. The clock management I saw from Miami today might be some of the worst I've ever seen. And it's like every year somebody tops it. Like, I don't understand how, like, especially as a backup, you know, you're paying a lot of money. I mean, you're not paying starter money, but you're still paying a lot of money, more than the average person. Yeah. Yeah. Way more than the average person. How do you not know how many downs there are? How do you not know how to spike a football when you need to? I mean, like, it's, you know, I know there's a lot more that goes into the game than that, but you're a professional. Like, it's always blown my mind. Like, what I saw today, especially, but just in general, like, I've seen so many backups, especially. Like, you're observing more than anybody else. You are, like, you know, they always say, oh, I got to be ready when my name is called, you know, because you never know when that time comes. So how do you not execute? Like, not saying you have to be better than a starter, but how do you not make the simple things look simple? Like, how do you not complete your simple tasks? Like, Miami killed, like, 50 seconds in two plays because they wouldn't spike the ball. And it basically ended the game.
No, it was really bad. It reminds me, and we had this topic in last year, because we were talking about the Giants and how bad they were. It was like some random Monday night, I think, Brandon, and you and I were in here, and we were talking about this. We're talking about Kirk Benkert, who's, you know, a career NFL backup, long time with the Packers, long time Aaron Rodgers backup.
Not in the league anymore.
No, but he's a huge Madden guy now, and he was talking about this idea. And you all of us three know this because we're Madden vets. We play Madden since we were kids. of this idea of how Madden is very tactical, it's very chess based, and how Madden players, like in particular, do 2 minute drills, do 1 minute drills, do I have to score a touchdown right here, right now? I need to save clock. I need to get out of bounds. I need to spike the ball. So many times, not even in professional circuit Madden, just when we're just casually playing, our minds just go to, what's the situation? What do I need to call? What do I need to do? And we said this on air last year, I think, which is sometimes Madden players have better awareness of what's going on than NFL pros do, and than NFL coaches do. And it's insane.
You know, it's, I mean, the thing is, you know, you're able to keep track of a lot of things also easier as a video, as a gamer, especially, you know, in a sports video game, because you're not worrying about the complex formations. I mean, some people do go that deep, but the average player, you're not worried about the complex formations. You're not worried about, you know, the complex play calls, having to, you know, put guys in the exact right position before you snap a ball. So, I mean, there is more that goes into it.
Yeah, it's a lot less complicated.
But at the same time, I do agree with the fact that it's like, you know, maybe not so much in Madden, but in real life, you know, as the game is happening too, like we look at it and we're like, spike the ball or throw it away. Like it's not so much the complication of things, it's the simple mental mistakes I can't understand. Anybody knows, you know, to spike a football. Anybody knows to throw the ball away under pressure. Anybody knows that, hey, I have to get out of bounds here to stop the clock because my team has no timeouts. Like, you know, the thing is too, it is complicated, but this is also why you're professionals. You train for this. You're supposed to be ready for this. And the fact that you don't execute the simplest of things is so incredibly frustrating, because it's like, you know, literally a 14-year-old high schooler knows, hey, I need to spike the ball here to give my team a chance to try to at least throw a Hail Mary ball into the end zone instead of running out the clock and running a dumb play that won't get me anywhere. Like, it's easier said than done, and of course, you know, that's why we're sitting here talking about it and not playing it, but at the same time, you know, it's like we've, you know, football's been around long enough now, so why do these mistakes keep rearing their ugly heads and keep happening in worse and worse ways, it feels like, every year? It shouldn't, but it does.
And it gets worse, it seems like, every year. Let's go to teams that are that were really bad and have been bad for a while, to teams that look like playoff teams. And I had this thought, Brandon. This is going to kind of relate to your Yankees this weekend, because they had, you know, a lot of really close calls throughout that series, especially this weekend. And I was thinking about that in relation to four NFL teams, two matchups: Texans, Packers, Lions, Vikings. And why I was thinking about that in particular is that there's always games throughout a regular season that define your season, right? Whether it's in a divisional round game or it's a random week 7 game, right? Yeah. Where you show, hey, I'm clearly a playoff team. And that's what just I kept thinking about. Not how those two games went, because those games were incredible, but also, like, these are four teams that showed to me today, yes, you're a playoff team. And yes, we probably already knew this weeks ago. But teams that have games like this, hell, I get it's week 7. Teams that have games like this where you're like, okay, yeah, both of you are playoff teams. That's what I felt with those two matchups. Did you feel the same way, Brandon?
Yeah. I mean, like, any sport, right? Just any sport in general. Until, like, we always say, like, no, until this team can prove it or show me something, I don't believe in it, right? Like, that happens a lot in sports, and that's just a common thing. You know, until this team can show you they're for real, it's like, you know, seeing is believing. So whether that's really any football team, not even with the matchups that we've been talking about, but any baseball game, any, you know, football, basketball, whatever game it is, whatever, what have you, when you can show that you belong, any, like, you know, any game, any team, any game, if you can show you belong, then you have a good a chance as anybody else to not just be a playoff team, but a contender if you can put it together, you know, consistently. If you can, you know, that's why teams always talk about, you know, bottling things up and taking the positives into next week and, you know, yada, 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 all the cliches. But there's truth in those cliches. If you can do the same things you did to win, or if two teams are just going at it, like, you know, like we had that Rams Chiefs game years ago.
Yeah,
that was, you know, an absolute just all time classic, and those two teams proved that they are who we think, who we thought they were,
or better even.
It's like, it's the same thing when it comes to any games this year between two teams. Like, we were talking about the Ravens Commanders game last week, how the Commanders had proved that they could hang with top competition. So it's any team, you know, like the Yankees did with, you know, with Cleveland. We were like, oh man, it was not looking great. They were down 2-0 until, you know, not late, but fairly later on in the game, you come back. And then you go into extra innings, and it doesn't seem like it's a game that, you know, all season that they had really, you know, they hadn't done well in games like this during the season, where it's like you didn't feel like they really had a chance of winning it. Like, their extra inning records weren't great this year. They weren't a real come-from-behind team this year like other teams were. And then you hit that 3-run home run, and such an incredible at-bat from Soto. It changes how people view you. It might not change how, you know, because us fans, we know it's there, but it could change how a lot of teams view you. It can change how your current opponent views you. And it's no different in football. Like, you know, you have a game like there's just so many, you know, either shootout games or close defensive games where it could be a really bad team hanging with a good team, or two good teams hanging with each other, or two teams are trying to find it, but do you know it's there, but they're hanging in there, and you can see that it's not a lack of effort. It might be like a bad coaching thing, but they're still out there giving it 100. There's always going to be just moments like that in sports in general, where you look at teams and you're like, I know this one belongs because of this game this week, or I know that this one belongs because of these few moments the past couple weeks, or this matchup will show us. And we say this every year with certain teams, like this matchup, whatever XYZ, will show us who this team really is. Are they who we think they are? So, you know, and the thing is, a lot of times they fall flat, but other times they rise to the occasion. And even if you don't win, if you just prove you belong, it can change a whole dynamic of a season. And it can jumpstart a path to a championship, or if you're not expected to win a ring, you can at least be competitive, make the playoffs, make some noise, something positive out of the season. So it happens more often than we think it does. It's not really, you know, it's not a revelation, but it is something interesting to think about when you think about how many games we have like that in the NFL, even just per year. How many times do we come on this pod like every week and we're like, at least not, you know, not every week, but like certain games we're like, wow, we took this away from this team and this away from that team.
Even if they lose, we're like, oh, that's a positive game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it does, you know, we talk about how bad football's been the past, you know, like year and a half, but there have been games mixed in here and there where like, wow, that team in that moment showed us something. So it's definitely something. It's definitely some good food for thought, something important to think about when you look at certain teams, you know, especially like in the first third of a season, like we're in now, that can show you, oh, they're for real.
Yeah. Let's go to a team that has given us food for thought in weird ways. Shane, I'll let you get started on the Bengals. And I guess overall their entire team. I mean, yes, the offense is part of it. But what's your overall view on them 7 weeks in? Because it feels like we're hitting the gas and then we're taking the foot off the pedal. We're hitting the gas, we're taking the foot off the pedal.
Yeah, and that kind of inconsistent nature is just a result of the way this team is structured. And that's that the offense is really good. And they, you know, we all know that when Burrow is healthy and he's hoeing with his guys, they are a top 4 or 5 offensive unit in the league. You know, this is not news to anybody. The issue is the Bengals defense this year has been hot garbage. So, you know, and a lot of people, it's like, well, you know, but they've been good the last couple of weeks. Yeah, they played the Giants and the Browns. All right, I don't want to hear it.
And look, the offense is only scoring, what, 20? They only scored 21 points on a Browns team that started 3 quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. To me, this season, they feel like, you know, every year there's a few teams where it's like they beat up on bad teams, but then they play guys that are good and they just look terrible. Yeah, this is what the Cowboys have been forever, and this is now kind of what the Bengals look like this season. And it's kind of surprising, to be honest, because I felt like they upgraded quite a bit on defense this offseason, but you know, now it's like, well, never mind.
We thought they did.
Yeah, we thought, and we thought wrong. So, yep. Yeah, but whatever. So, yeah, I think ultimately, you know, I just I look at the rest of this division. I mean, Cleveland is just a tire fire right now, but I just don't feel, even if they do turn on the gas, I feel like they're not going to be able to catch Baltimore or Pittsburgh. And I cannot believe I'm saying that, but I mean, Pittsburgh, they just look a lot more buttoned up, a lot more, you know, at least they have a good defense and a consistent running game. That's three of the four things you need to win. Bengals have like one and a half of those things. So, you know, yeah, that's
yeah,
a bit of a tangent, but that's just my overall feeling with them right now.
Brandon, I'm sure you've shared that same sentiment at this point with them.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the Bengals, and we were talking about how they start slow every year. We're like, oh yeah, you know, one and two.
It's week seven. You can't the start slow is over. Yeah. We're in October.
Exactly. Like okay, now it's time to turn it on, and it's like, yeah, okay, great. You know, you won two straight. Like, so, like any team that plays the Giants and Bengals, I mean Giants and Browns, can beat the Giants and Browns. That's how bad those two teams are. Like right now the Cardinals could beat those two teams. Well, like that, like it's not saying much. They it's like that's why I was like, oh, a win's a win. I'm like, not really, because I'm like, yeah, you know, the Eagles just beat both of them too. And it's like, I mean, it wasn't convincing either, at least not in my eyes. So, you know, and especially with the Bengals, you should have, with that offense, you should have, and how much they can score any given week, you should have wiped the floor with both teams, but especially the Giants. And you just didn't. You almost lost that game. The Giants had so many opportunities to try to take the lead or even just tie it or come back whenever it was. So, excuse me, but it's, I look at the Bengals and I'm just, I cannot see that team being a Super Bowl contender. I can't see that team. I almost am afraid to say, at least as of right now, because it's not early, but it's still early enough. But as of right now, I'm just like, that's not even a team capable of winning a playoff game. Like, that's crazy. I think with a team that has, you know, a trio of Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow, and T. Higgins. So it's, I get worried. Like, it's crazy how next week the Eagles and Bengals are playing each other. Both teams just got done beating the Browns and Giants. Both teams haven't looked great. But I just because the Bengals defense is so bad, I trust the Birds more, not just being a homer. I do trust the Eagles more. But I am just worried with the Bengals that the stop and start stuff, like, this is the first season they really kind of had, like, and at least in a while under Joe Burrow, where they've had to kind of, you know, flip the switch and then, you know, turn off the switch, flip the switch, you know, as we're saying, you know, hit the gas, step off the gas. Like, that's fine for the first month of the season. You expect that from the Bengals, like we're saying, but not by week seven. And you're still not turning it on yet. I mean, it's a big, big problem. I mean, because the AFC North, you know what the one thing? All those teams pretty much do better than you. They're better defensively. Even the Browns are better defensively, despite their record. They are a top. Going into the last week against the Eagles, they were ranked number 9, I think, in defense. Like, you know, the Ravens have had a couple bad games, but their defense will show up eventually. The Steelers have one of the best defenses in the league, I think, so far this year. So all those teams are better defensively. And the only reason you're not last is because the Cleveland Browns exist. So it's really, they're not in a, you know, it's still early. They're not in a terrible, terrible spot. But if they don't string together like a solid month, then I can't see how they go far at all this year.
Yeah, it's an interesting, it's one of the most interesting teams in the league, I'll say. We're going to bring back a segment that I don't think I've done in a while. I'm going to call this open table. So open table means I'm going to give a question and you guys just go, right? Just go. So open table, my first open table question. And I had a feeling we were going to get to this for the open table at some point. But Deshaun Watson, out for the year, torn Achilles. The reaction from the fans, Myles Garrett saying he's been a solid locker room guy. I mean, might be me to speak, might not be. The off the field stuff. How do you feel about this? How should the organization feel about this situation? It's a very complex sort of line, it feels like. Where, how do you react to this injury? What's the future going to hold? It makes everything so complex. So, open table, go ahead.
Well, I said this in the chat earlier. I don't think we're ever going to see him take a snap in the NFL again. I really don't. I know that sounds dramatic, but, you know, I don't think the Browns are going to want to have him back after how god awful he's been, and just how he's had these, you know, back to back to back season ending injuries, and you know, and not to mention all the off field controversy. And just considering all that, I don't think any team is gonna want to pick him up even as a backup, and you know, knowing him, he'd probably, you know, ask for a lot more money than he's worth. You know, I mean, people are saying, oh, that wouldn't happen. It's like, well, look at Colin Kaepernick. He had a controversy surrounding him.
Yep.
No one even thought about him after that. Granted,
it's way different, but yes.
His controversy, I thought, was a little more ridiculous. I was like, come on. Like, if you disagree with the guy, fine. You don't have to say that he deserves to be hung or whatever. Like, just whatever. It's a little different than this, where he actually did something truly awful. Allegedly, but I'm fairly confident that it happened.
When it's that many cases, it's not allegedly.
Yep, that's exactly. Loose set. Yeah.
So, I just have to say allegedly for legal purposes.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I agree with you guys. So just, you know, considering all that, and I mean, he's approaching 30. You know, he's at the age anyways where teams are kind of like, you know, I just don't think anyone's going to want him considering all this. And, you know, but maybe the Browns will be stupid and give him another chance. I don't know why they would, but, you know, it is the Browns, so it wouldn't surprise me. But, I mean, I just feel like, I don't know. I just have this feeling. It's like we're not going to see him again in the league. But we'll see.
Yeah. Brandon, go ahead.
I think, and I just hope for the sake of Browns fans and the league that's the last time we see him. But people were very split about this. And I mean, it is controversial. It's like everybody's like, oh, you shouldn't cheer injuries. But I'm like, well, but it's Deshaun Watson. Like,
yeah.
I get both sides. Like, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I get both sides of the argument. But I'm just like, it's interesting how polarizing, like, everything he's done in the past 2.5 years has been. But it's just, God, I mean, I look at him and I'm thinking like Shane. I'm like, who the hell is gonna want him? He's statistically, I think, the worst quarterback in the NFL this year. Guy turns the ball over a ton. Guy just runs around into sacks. There was even footage of him where in a game this year, it might have been even like, I think back in like week two, where he was on the ground, like started to get up, he wasn't on the ground. His offensive lineman or somebody was on the ground. He reached out his hand to try to pick them up. His teammate slapped his hand away. Said, no, I don't want your help. Like,
yeah,
that's so. When Myles Garrett is saying he's a good locker room guy, I'm like, I mean, listen, what else is he gonna say? Well,
yeah, that's PR training.
I'm like, because I mean, like, because even if you say something that's not that, even if you say something like, oh well, we still believe in Deshaun, like, even if you try to spin it a different way, the media is gonna say, oh, we know, like we still know how you feel about Deshaun Watson. We know, like. You know, that's just how it is. I mean, so he's got to say the most positive answer about a guy like that, because even if you say something that's not as positive but still not damning, it's going to come off as damning. So it's that whole situation. And you know who I feel the worst for out of anybody in that organization? Well, Amari Cooper was one, but now he's gone. Thank the
Stefanski.
Lord.
Stefanski.
Thank you. It's Stefanski. Yep. Because that is a two-time coach of the year who has pushed all the right buttons he possibly could for this franchise, and he can't get anywhere with it. I don't know. Like, Kevin Stefanski has done everything right since he's been there. I mean, otherwise he wouldn't have, you know, a two-time coach of the year. You know, he wouldn't be a two-time coach of the year already. And he's still fairly younger for a coach. So it's awful how he has to deal with all of this. He gets asked these questions on a daily basis about him and about, you know, oh, like, are you thinking about making a quarterback change? Are you thinking about, you know, like.
It's been every Sunday for the past 2 to 3 weeks, Brandon. Every Sunday, that's the first question he walks into.
The thing is, he can't click because if they do, Cleveland will finally be forced, and they don't want to, they will finally be forced to admit that their contract with him was wrong. Even though everybody and their mother knows it, that fully guaranteed contract is the worst in not just in NFL, in sports history, we've said that 1,000 times, they will have to be forced to admit with full egg on their face that they were wrong. And they're not going to do that.
And I've heard people talk about this. This isn't just me talking about this. You go all over social media. You go over even, I think, Browns reporters have said this. The huge reason Deshaun Watson is starting is Jimmy Haslam. Because he's the one. Because coaches, look, I understand the ownership is part of it, right? You can't make a quarterback change without the owner's approval, right? Or any change without the owner's approval. Hell, right? We've seen that with the Jets. He has to say that because I know Kevin Stefanski. We know the kind of coach he is. He wants to go to Dorian Thompson-Robinson. He wants to go to Jameis Winston the past few weeks. You can see it in his press conferences. But if he says, we're thinking about it, he's going to get a call from Jimmy Haslam saying, what are you doing? It's Haslam. Yeah. It's Haslam.
It's just,
it's got to be.
Yeah, and not only does it, you know, not only is that pretty much the you know, the consensus here, because everybody just kind of knows that. It's just, we know how these things kind of work. But, like, you know, it's like, you know what the most bizarre thing about Deshaun Watson is that a lot of guys, right, a lot of guys will have an arc where start off good, maybe not great or whatever it is, and have a low period, come back, find themselves with whatever it is, like, you know, like a Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff, you know, whatever it is. But the most bizarre thing is, and I get the legal battles, you know, will take a toll on him. I mean, as they should, because I mean, he deserves.
They are. Hell. They are. You can tell it with him on the field.
But it's bizarre how, and well, this is why, like, and this is why missing time in the NFL is important, because he missed a lot of, he essentially, between the illegal battles and not being able to play and shaking the rust off, he essentially missed 2 years or so.
Like two years, exactly, pretty much.
It's amazing how, but it's amazing still how just in those 2 years, like, he went from, we were talking about him before the stuff hit the fan, a potential top five quarterback in football, elite. Like,
oh yeah,
like, absolutely. We were like, you know, this guy's amazing. Like, it's crazy how it just, it all has just not even spot, like, there's not even a word to say it's spiraled, because spiral, I don't even think is even the correct term. There's got to be something worse than spiral.
A tornado? That's probably such a bad term for what's going on in the world, but like a tornado, something.
It's become a complete nightmare. Like, there's nothing at this point that the Browns have to finally at some point admit, hey, we messed up, eat the money, that's it. Like,
guess who did that? Denver Broncos, Sean Payton. They said, we screwed up. We're fine. We got a rookie.
Yeah. But the thing is, the longer this goes on, the more you continue to say, you know, we stick by him and all this stuff. It can't look worse than already does. You've hit rock bottom. Just admit you were wrong and move on, because it's, and, you know, because this chapter in Brown's history, in Deshaun Watson's career, in the front office, it is the darkest period in football that we've ever seen.
Yeah. So, and you think about the Browns' history, right? It the fact that you're saying that, for sure. And Shane has brought this up about Brian Daboll, how he's a good coach, and, you know, Daniel Jones and all that mess. So he might go, you know, get fired. I'm pretty confident Kevin Stefanski is going to get fired. And some of their team is going to pick him up, and he's going to be the head coach.
Which he shouldn't.
He shouldn't. And that's my point. That's my point. Exactly my point. He shouldn't be fired. He probably will be fired. And he'll go to another team, and he will be an incredible head coach again.
And he'll kick ass.
And he'll kick ass. And same with Brian Daboll, too. Same with Brian Daboll as well.
They'll scapegoat him.
Absolutely. Let's go from one head coach in Kevin Stefanski to another. Yes, we have a London game topic. It's not even really about the game. Open table. Gerard Mayo said after the game in London, in his post-game press conferences, that his team that he coaches is quote-unquote soft. Reaction.
Man.
He said that to the media after the game.
That's... Shane, take that, because I have a thought in my head. I hope you say the exact same thing I'm thinking.
That's a good way to piss off and lose your locker room.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, hey, they might be. I don't know. But if you... Let's just say this. NFL players are really talented athletes, making a lot of money. So even if they're good dudes, there is inevitably going to be a lot of ego in that room. Okay. And, you know, the biggest source of said ego is that they're tough. They're fast. They're strong, you know. So for your leader, your coach, to come out and say they're soft, yeah, it's not like the team has come out and started well. That's going to cause some friction, I would think, you know, and I don't know. It's, yeah, he just, I don't know a lot about, you know, what Gerard Mayo is trying to do from like an X's and O's standpoint, but just from at least at the podium, he's been awful.
Yeah.
You know, which it's funny because like it's complete opposite of Belichick, who was like just a robot up there, like never said the wrong thing. But granted, he never, well,
never said anything.
No, right. and by the way, the important thing that I want to point out before Shane continues, if you watch every press conference Brady ever did, Edelman ever did, anyone in that locker room during Bill Belichick's tenure, they were all the same. They all just followed his lead.
Yeah.
And nobody ever threw anyone else under the bus.
Yep.
Ever. If they were addressing something, like, you know, something that didn't go well, it was just like, yeah, we just got to do that better next time.
We're on to Cincinnati. Remember we're on to Cincinnati. That was Bill Belichick.
Cincinnati, yeah,
that was Bill Belichick and his entire organization every week.
But it was never they messed up or they did the, you know, and yeah, I mean it was a well-oiled machine for a reason. which it's really funny now because. Now that Belichick is on TV all the time, you never, ever would have known that he was this, you know, like, animated and had this much of a personality. Because for the last 20 years, all we ever saw of this guy was just, yeah, well, you know, the game wasn't great, but now we're on to Cincinnati. It's just like, and then now he's on TV, like,
smiling. And he's amazing. And he's absolutely incredible on TV. He's so good.
It's just like, what?
And what's he's
this act you've been putting on?
And not only that, he's a football savant. That's why I love listening to Bill Belichick. And you know this if you've seen like the NFL decade team with him and Collinsworth, just beautiful stuff. Brandon, what's your thoughts on what would you think if you're in an NFL locker room and your head coach goes up in the podium after a game and calls your team soft, calls basically you soft?
I'd be pissed. Like, it's like, it's, you know, it's not for a lack of trying. Like, if I know I'm doing my best, even if I know my teammates, you know, were struggling, you don't throw your team, your teammates, anything like that, like we were just saying, you don't throw them under the bus. You just don't throw them under the bus. You don't do any of that kind of stuff. And what's crazy is that might not even be the weirdest thing that we've heard this year from a head coach. Antonio Pierce said his team made business decisions after a loss, a bad loss.
And we're going to make business decisions after. The only business decision they made was changing the quarterback and trading Devontae Adams. I don't know if that's a great business decision, but whatever.
And then that wasn't crazy enough. Doug Peterson got heated and animated when they were questioning his job. When he was like, you know, when he was like, oh, I wasn't aware, you know, of all, bro, you've been a coach for a long time now. You were like, what's crazy is these guys too, especially these three coaches, and we'll get back to Mayo in a second, but these three guys, all former players, all football lifers, you've had plenty of PR training. And I get you're pissed after a loss, but how do you not... Like, you can't say those things that you're saying. You just can't. Like, you know, or... And then, like, that wasn't even the craziest thing we heard in football coaching, period. The Arizona State head coach. Didn't he just say we're having kicking tryouts because our kicking game sucks?
Yeah, I was trying to tell you guys, go apply to ASU and go into kicking tryouts. By the way, that is happening tomorrow morning. That's actually happening. He apologized, but it's happening.
Yeah, of course he's gonna apologize. He's gonna backtrack. But my God, you just ruined that poor kid's life by saying that. Like, holy hell, bro. And like, what, like, Gerard Mayo didn't even say the worst thing we've heard from a head coach all year. Like, well, I don't know what's in the water these days, but it's something extra special. But I mean, like, you know, Gerard Mayo, listen, I know he's pissed, but you've got to realize, I know you want every coach, of course, every coaching team wants to win, But we've all been on bad teams, or know people have been on bad teams at some point in life. You know you're in a bad team.
No, but you know you've been assigned to a rebuilding situation with a young quarterback. Exactly. It's actually been pretty good. Drake May has been pretty good the last 2 weeks. I'm not even gonna lie. Yeah. He wasn't great last week. He was pretty good today.
That's what I was getting towards. Was like, you know, you're not winning anything this year. You know that you are in charge to establish a new culture in this building after the dynasty era. You know that you have big shoes to fill, but you need to build it one step at a time. So for you to come in as a rookie head coach and sit there and then throw your team under the bus in week 7, I mean, to throw them under the bus at all is unacceptable. But in a rookie head coach's season, you throw them under the bus in week 7 when you know that the season's basically a wash anyway. What message are you sending to your team? Because, the players, they still believe probably somewhere in there that they can come back, that they can make something out of this season, that they can take away some positives. So if their head coach is already telling them in week 7 basically, piss off, you guys suck, that's like, it's unacceptable. It's just, there's different ways of saying it. Like, oh, a different way of saying it is, if you have PR training, is, oh, like, we didn't play well enough. We haven't played well enough for weeks. We got to figure these things out and build on positives. That's what you say. You don't sit there and say, like Antonio Pierce, this team made business decisions today. Or
worse off.
Yeah, or worse off, like Rob Mayo said. Or Doug Pearson saying, like, oh, questioning the reporter about, like, does he think he's in trouble with his job and things like that. It's like, you cannot do that. There's ways of spinning it without making your team hate you. And I guarantee right now, there are players in that Patriots locker room that do not like him for saying that. And there's going to be a lot of, for the front office, people are going to be like, hey, don't you ever do that again. Because that is not, especially after the Bill Belichick era, that is not how we do things in New England. So it's...
And you know this. You were a player in Belichick's system.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing, too. You were there. That's the biggest part. You were there. You lived it. So how did you... What? It just went in one ear and out the other? The Patriot way of doing things just went in one ear and out the other? How many times did we hear, like, the mantra in New England of, do your job, right? But... do your job didn't just apply to the players. It applies to the coaches, too. And right now, he's not doing a very good job. So, I don't understand how you can sit there and you get a little bit heated and you're like, oh, we're soft. Like, no, you don't. You can let fans and reporters say that because it's our job to analyze it from the outside and what we see. But you cannot call your players soft and already punch down on a team that's already not going anywhere and is already, you can see the body language isn't great.
Yeah. And my thing with this, I'll make this pretty quick because I know we're going a little long. But when it comes to Mayo, I remember in the offseason hearing the McCourty brothers on the Patriots preseason broadcast talking about this idea of, I've talked to Gerard Mayo and he wants to build a new do your job culture, a new Patriot way focus. And like, that's not how you do it. Not at all. And another piece of this is watching that London game this morning, waking up bright and early on the West Coast for that. I was like, a couple drives in, I was like, yes, Drake May, there you go. There you go. There you go. You're building, you're getting it, you're learning. And he's taking all these tools from college that I really liked at UNC. And it's like, okay, you're building. You're getting it. I like a lot of the young players. Jalen Polk hasn't been perfect this year. He's got some drop troubles, but I like him. I think he fits what they like to do. I've always liked the kicking and punting game, weirdly, for New England. I know it's really random, but they always do well there. Christian Gonzalez is there and he has a full season to develop. There's actually a lot of really fun and positive pieces and positive developmental players here that you want to have on this roster for a long time, right? That you want to be a part of this culture and preach it for a long time. These really exciting young players. How does it feel for the guys who are old and about to retire in that locker room? I mean, it's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. We'll finish up with the Seahawks. Shane, I'll let you go on this. We'll see what happens with DK in the next few days, but this offensive line finally performed and it showed.
Yeah. God, imagine what happens when you swap out the worst right tackle in NFL history. I don't know if he's actually the worst, but one of the worst I've ever seen. I mean, he allowed, through week six, he allowed 35 pressures. The second most allowed.
Yeah, Forsythe, correct? Forsythe,
yes. Yeah. The second most allowed by an offensive lineman was 19. So 35 versus 19, almost double. That's how bad he was. Anyways, so he's hurt, and they put in Jarrell, his backup, and he looked great. So I hope to God that they keep him in instead of going back to Stone Forsythe if he gets healthy. Because, yeah, that was a lot better. And I think really it just proved my point that the Seahawks' worst enemy really is themselves. With, you know, the last few games, they just shot themselves in the foot with penalties and turnovers. And then, of course, the sloppy right side offensive line play. And none of those things happened today, and they killed Atlanta. So, and, you know, Atlanta's not a bad team. I mean, they were 4-2, and they were competitive with the Chiefs, and, you know, they're decent. So, yeah, tough game next week against Buffalo, but it is at home, so, you know, they have that going in their favor. I don't know. It'll be interesting. And Atlanta, well. Sorry. Although, Michael Penix got just a little NFL action, so that was cool. But, yeah. That's all I have to say there.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a positive for them. All right, who's ready for Venom, Let There Be Carnage?
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
Our reaction just summed up how we feel. Like we need to talk about it.
I'm trying to think of what some. My favorite quote in the whole movie is Venom and Eddie are in the jail. They're walking around. Like, Venom goes, he goes, who's gonna care if I polish off a couple of these idiots? And he's like, well, we watch Making a Murderer and all this other stuff. And he goes, and at the end of the conversation, he goes, I am a predator, Eddie. Lions do not eat salad. And then Eddie goes, but you're not a lion, are you? I think of you more as a vicious little house bat thing, pig dog house bat thing. And then Venom goes, you suck. And then Eddie goes, you suck. And he's like, sorry, I have a panic attack. He's like trying to avoid every piece of it. And that's just one of the amazing quotes in this movie. Just super funny. Really funny movie. Stupid, but funny. Shane, this is your first time watching this. Part of me wanting to do this movie, obviously, we're going to talk about the history of this version of the character, the Lethal Protector version of the character, and all these different pieces. But I was really excited to hear your overall review on this incredibly funny but bad movie. So go ahead. You have the floor.
Yeah, I think this is like one of the worst movies I've seen in months. I mean, my expectations were already low, but God, they just...
Oh, even... you remind me of that meme. Our expectations were low for you, but holy fuck.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, part of this is because I've been a big fan of the Carnage character throughout my days. And just seeing him completely botched for the first time ever on the big screen, I was like, oh, this could be so great. And then that happened. That just left a really sour taste in my mouth. I mean, we've had some great iterations of him in cartoons, like in the 90s cartoon was fantastic. Yes. In that. Even the Amazing Spider-Man 2 video game based on the movie had a little subplot with Carnage, and he was great in that too.
But explain how it's different, because he's like a lot more villainous and a lot more scary in those versions, correct?
Yeah, because he's, you know, he's kind of supposed to be, how do I describe it? He's in those versions, he's a lot creepier, I think is the best way to describe it. He's a lot more chilling. Whereas in this, he's just like, I don't know, they like try to turn him into like the Joker, and it's just like, that's not who he is as a character. No shot against Woody Harrelson, he's a fantastic actor. I just don't think he's the right guy for this part. The end fight that they have is cool and all, but like,
they're just like, there's like, oh shit, that's a red one, and it's like, you can eat everybody but don't eat the guy in the robe.
Yeah, it's like, you know, their final fight was cool, but it's just like, it kind of felt like they were like, okay, we got this fight, now we just have to figure out what to do for the first 2 hours leading up to it. And they go, well, just kind of did whatever. And because of that, they only got a 90-minute movie because they couldn't think of shit. Like, that's what it feels like. That's another thing. This movie's only 97 minutes, which is an hour and 37 minutes. Feels like 2 hours and 37 minutes. My God, it's so slow and boring. It kind of tries to be funny, but like, I only laughed three times.
It's funny, but it's funny to a point. I have an important question. What moment were you like, oh shit, this is rough? Like, was like, what minute were you like, uh-oh?
About 10.
Jesus.
Damn.
Oh yeah, it was quick. I was like, yeah, this is going nowhere.
Not even in the first third, the first tenth of the movie.
Yeah. I was like, well, let me just, maybe it'll get better, and it didn't. but then, you know, then the final fight was cool at least, but so that redeemed it a little bit, but yeah, it just felt like such a wasted opportunity with this movie, and with these are two very bizarre characters, and so this should be a bizarre movie, not like some, I don't even know how you describe this. It's like a prison escape drama. I don't know.
Do you know what it's actually described as?
What?
And Andy Serkis talked about this. Oh, I missed one thing. I gotta mute myself so I can find this. With Tom Hardy, but I'll find it. It is a rom com, and I was trying to see if you would notice. It's a Andy Serkis said it's a rom-com, and it is a rom-com, because it basically,
why he should stick to acting and not directing.
Yeah.
Let me quickly explain this. So basically, it's this asexual relationship between Venom and Eddie, and what they were trying to do is basically talk about that quote unquote romantic relationship from the fight they have, where it's like, you know, after he like goes all blah on Carnage, like that fight is a great example of that. So it's Tanley, how it's described is a rom-com.
Well, we know that they act like a married couple. That's not a secret. I mean, we've known that, but to openly describe, like, but that's part of the funny part of it. But to openly and seriously describe it as a rom-com is hilarious to me.
But Shane, continue. I'm gonna mute myself to find this really quick. So that, you guys go.
That's it. My thoughts are done.
All right, Brandon, go ahead while I get this thing really quick.
Yeah, that didn't take long, nor did I expect it to. So I mean, yeah, but I know Rob has a different opinion. I know he likes two better than one. I like the first one better than the second one.
Yeah, same.
The one thing that, because the first one just to me just seemed cooler to me, and I liked how they just kind of they play around. And I know Rob's, and we're gonna talk about it. They play around obviously with the idea that in this universe, that Venom is an antihero because it's based on the Lethal Protector, Universal Protector. I can't remember what the actual name is.
Lethal Protector.
Like that. I like portraying a hero from a different angle, and I like how, you know, we kind of get this, you know, I've always loved Venom. Venom is probably one of my favorite Marvel. I mean, I'm a Spider-Man fan, so of course I love Venom, but Venom is one of probably my favorite villain ever. Like, him and the Joker are one and two. But I shouldn't even say him. It's like it's a symbiote. No, it's not even a him. I mean, it sounds like a him. Well, whatever. Misgendering. Yeah, whatever. But it's definitely like the second one. I watching it again, I'm just like, man, I remember the feelings I had when I saw the trailer for it, and I was like, or even when I saw the ending of the first one, and obviously they teased that, you know, Woody Harrelson was gonna be Carnage, and I was like, oh, that is sick. And I'm like, wait a minute. Knowing this movie, Woody Harrelson's going to have to pull a performance out of his ass to save it. And I'm like, because Woody Harrelson does not deserve it. But Woody Harrelson has taken some weird roles in his career. But the thing is, he always managed to turn in a great performance, no matter what role he takes. Even if it's the worst thing ever, he still manages to find a way to make it work somewhat, at least. So it's... I was like, yes, we're getting him for the second one. The second one's going to be great. I like the first one. I'm like, I should like the second one. Get to the second one. And it let me down. I was like, well, that's not what I wanted. But, you know, you know what this movie kind of falls victim to for me? It's just, it feels like it's just, you're introducing, like, it feels like you're not introducing, or at least you're bringing in one too many characters. And a lot of sequels fall into this trap. You're bringing in one too many characters that you don't necessarily need to tell a story like this.
Yeah, overambitious.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, you have Venom, you have Carnage, you know, you got a little bit of a love interest, but like, you don't need Naomi Harris to play Shriek. I don't think you needed her. I don't think you needed what the hell is that? The police detective, who basically ends up, you know, we know that he ends up
Detective
being
Mulligan becoming Toxin, yeah.
Like you didn't need him. Like I get it, but you know, this one, I don't like how sequels will always have, you know, like three or four subplots, and I'm like, when you only need maybe one or two. It's like Shane said, it's not a long movie, you know, it's only an hour and a half, but my God, is it a long hour and a half. I'm dying on this podcast tonight. But it's like, especially and the problem with it too is it also, you know, it was just like other movies at that time, it got delayed because of COVID, so everybody had to wait pretty much a year for it. And for that to be the final product, where I just didn't think it was as funny or as interesting as the first one, I was like, man, the thing is, you wasted a good cast. I'm like, it'll never sit right with me. I can't wait for the third, because I want to see the third end this trilogy on a high note, or at least a high enough note, because this, let's be honest, it's not going to end on a high note. But you got to save it somehow. Because you know what's crazy? I know these movies rely on CGI a lot, and they do. But my God, I feel like the second one rely on it way more than the first. I mean, for good reason. But things, you have more characters to talk about, you know, more of a more convoluted plot. But at the same time, it felt like the last half hour, the last third of this movie, it almost felt like it was nothing but CGI. And I was like, okay, I get it, but I don't need this right now. Like, I want to watch a movie, not a cartoon.
Yeah, I think that's a good thought. Yeah.
And I'm like, because I don't remember the first one being, you know, that
no.
heavily reliant.
No, absolutely not. No.
But it's just, you know, depending on what other movies we fill in the kind of the gaps soon, you know, because I know we have some gaps coming up, you know, especially as we get these next like month and a half. I know we've got some gaps, so, you know, depending on what movies we pick and what we talk about, like, I don't want to say this is the lowest rating we'll give all year, but I remember, Rob, you said last week this is probably the lowest rating we'll give it all year.
I am fairly confident this is going to end up finishing last. And I knew that going into this, but I was like, I want to talk about this character before, you know, this saga is over. So let's just get it out the way.
Yeah, let's just say I'm not, I don't plan on giving out a movie worse than this.
Yeah, no, I don't. Yeah. I don't think Shane will. And I don't think Will, Brandon, or I will for the rest of the year. I don't think so.
If I give out something genuinely worse than this, I will retire from this podcast.
Like, if I give out Morbius, that would be a big problem.
Oh,
we're not doing
you
that.
You know what? I kind of hope you do just as a big just laugh.
Honestly, what I want to do for Pro Bowl week is we do Killing Captain Alex, or Who Killed Captain Alex, is like the meme movie, because I know Shane and I love the director's cut of that film.
It's so funny.
As like a spoof. This is kind of like finishing the bad movie category. Brandon,
I would rather watch Who Killed Captain Alex than watch this again.
I actually agree.
That's
funny. Yeah. Are you good, Brandon? Do you have any kind of last words to say on this?
No, but I'm saying if the first one to me is like a 6 out of 10, because I did like it, but it wasn't great. Like, that's a 6 out of 10. This one's at like a 4.
Yeah, that's fair.
And the only reason I'm not rating it lower is because I love Woody Harrelson too much, and also I just love Venom, like I said. So it's like, if it wasn't those two things, I would be putting this at like a 1, a 1.5. But
I also like, would.
Yeah, but I'm like, I'll give it a 4, because I'm like, Woody Harrelson does do good what he barely has to work with. And Naomi Harris is a good actress. And I like Ed Hardy. Like, Ed Hardy, Tom Hardy, Jesus, I'm thinking of the clothes. But yeah, 6 out of 10 for the first one. I know, we were talking about, hey, you know, if you want to watch the first one, then watch this one. I mean,
which I did. I watched the first one for the second time.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it. 6 out of 10 for the first one because I like it more, and 4 out of 10 for this one.
So I'll talk about, so when I first heard about this character, I was like, this character looks freaky. What are these movies like? And I watched clips. I was like, oh, he's funny. I got to watch these movies. The first one, I didn't really understand the character that well, and I realized it now when I watched it the second time. Like, I understand a lot more about the mannerisms of the character and all these different things. The CGI is rough in the first one for me, compared to this one. And comparatively to the third one. Like, if you look very closely at the trailers, they've definitely improved on the CGI, as they should, right? Makes sense. I wanted to watch the second one because, well, mainly because Shane hasn't seen it, and I wanted to see it. But for me, when it comes to, so I'll quickly say with the first one, I thought Riz Ahmed and Tom Hardy had like the most fun they've ever had acting, and I think Tom Hardy, he knows these movies aren't that great, but he really enjoys playing the characters that he plays, because he plays Venom, he plays a few other ones throughout like this bubble of movies, and he clearly has fun doing it. And Riz Ahmed did, I think Woody Harrelson did, I think the guy even who played the cop, I felt, did. When it comes to the first one, what irks me about the first one is Riot. Just like, I think Riot, this version of Riot in these movies are really fun. He's a really fun character, and he's only technically in it for 5 minutes. And they spend like a very good chunk of the movie being like, oh, he's jumping around from person to person, but why is he jumping around? And he just randomly decides to go to San Francisco. And I also didn't like the idea that, oh, and I feel the same way about the second one in this way, where it's like, oh, Venom was going to be on Riot's side and blow up the world and all this crap. But then all of a sudden he decides to stay, and it's supposed to be this like really poignant moment of you did, Eddie. You made me feel like I wanted to stay because I'm a loser like you in my world. And it's like, no, I would have liked more depth. And same with Treak in the second one. At the end of the final battle, she all of a sudden says, oh my god, that's too much, and I'm gonna help Venom. It's like, oh Jesus, that's a really aggressive turn. So that was a problem for me in both movies. I just think I felt it so bizarre that Riot is just moving from person to person and not really getting character development, and then all of a sudden, oh, he's the villain, and Carlton Drake has him. It's like, oh, really? There are pieces of this, of the first one, that I really like in terms of the relationship development, and not only that, I think the set pieces are a lot of fun. I think the set pieces in the first one are really enjoyable. As for the second one, I think it just has a more concrete story in terms of like, oh, we're not having this random villain just be like jumped in. Like right from the jump, you know Carnage is the villain, you know what they're doing with him. I still think the second one is a better movie, but only by just a little bit. Like, these movies are indistinguishable for me. Like, I honestly end up giving both of them sixes. Like, they're too indistinguishable for me. I think Venom is really funny in these movies. I think the context that Shane provided for Carnage hurts this movie a lot for me as well, thinking about that piece. But, like, at the end of the day, I think that I like movies that are very much about, you know, that are very much just like, okay, I'm just going to sit down and have fun watching this. And I'm not going to think about the schematics of the film or how this thing works or how that thing works. And I think that's what I firmly enjoy about these movies, is it is kind of the guilty pleasure movie for me, of like, these movies aren't good, but I'm still having a fun time with them. So they both get sixes for me. Brandon, I have something that will interest you. Are you ready for this?
Give me it.
Okay. So, I had to look it up really quick because I forgot to earlier in the day. Tom Hardy was on with BBC Radio 1. I forgot who the interviewer is, but he's one of the best in the business when it comes to movies. So, much respect to him. He asked about, in the promotional material for this movie, for Let There Be Carnage, he asked Tom Hardy, you know, how did you come up with the Venom voice? And his response was, there's a little bit of Busta Rhymes in there. There's a little bit of Method and Redman. There's a little bit of James Brown. And there's a little bit of the actor from the olden days of Richard Burns. What do you think about kind of that mix when you think about Venom's actual voice in the film?
I out of all the times I've heard him giving him that voice, I've never thought about where that could have came from. But the more that I hear that, and the more that I'm thinking about his voice, I'm like, oh my god, that makes sense. Like,
really does.
Because I'm like when you ever hear, you know, Busta Rhymes talk, you know, he kind of has like that, you know, gruffness, but also like, you know, kind of like a changing, you know, fluctuating in tone, you know, like, you know, it's like, oh my god, like, you know, it's like, you know, like I love Busta Rhymes' music, so it's like I know how he sounds, and it's like I love, you know, Redman, Method Man, like I can hear that, I can especially hear Redman, especially, so I get where that comes from. I can definitely hear. I don't know if I hear James Brown as much.
I was gonna say that seems weird.
That one seems like I'm trying to figure out where the emphasis on James Brown voice on James Brown's voice is on Venom. But I definitely hear the rappers, and then I can definitely hear Richard Burns. But I never thought of that like that. That's boy, is that interesting. I like, because you always hear, like, especially like, what is it, last year, like we make fun of the, like, the Grinch, right? And how, like, you know, Jim Carrey just sounds like Sean Connery.
Yeah.
that's pretty much copy paste what Jim Carrey did. Which makes it even funnier. Because, you know, it's not the Grinch who stole Christmas, it's that Sean Connery stole Christmas. It's crazy how, like, he took a lot of inspiration from different things. I mean, yeah, three musicians, but rap, you know, rap, R&B/soul, and an actor. Like, I would never think to mix a bunch of different voices into one and try to, you know, pull something out like that. Like, I can see taking inspiration from a certain, like, an actor or two, but not like, but like other, cause other actors take inspiration from a certain music artist, like one that they might listen to, and then adapt it to their style or whatever. And it's like, I can't imagine taking musicians and actors, completely different, a whole bunch of them, putting them, you know, stirring them in the melting pot and coming up with that. And then that, and then it's not just your voice for a regular role. You are then voicing a CGI character, and yeah, it happens to be like a beloved, you know, like superhero anti-villain or anti-hero, you know, villain kind of character. Like, it's there is so much to unpack in that I can't even find the words to describe that. But I do find it interesting that he did take any inspiration. I didn't even think Tom Hardy listened to rap music. I wouldn't think that a white British dude, never would have thought that in my life. So I have even more respect for him. I loved him already. I love him even more now. So that's interesting. I like that.
Shane, what do you think about how he transferred all those things into the voice of Venom?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who 3/4 of those people are, but but yeah, it's, I mean, that's a tough task to, you know, I mean, it's hard enough to try and, you know, kind of imitate one person, let alone, you know, 4 or 5, and kind of putting them all together. So yeah, kudos to him for that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. What actor did you say it was? His name is Richard Burns?
Richard Burns, yeah. Like a really old actor from, like, I think the 60s era, something of that sort.
Or are you, I'm trying to think. Nah, it wouldn't be. Cause you know what, you know who I was thinking of when you kept saying, like, I think every time I think of the last name Burns, I only think of George Burns.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, I'm surprised that I was like, I'd look that guy up for a second. I'm like, interesting. Like, I've heard him before, but I was like, I didn't actually know that was the name. But like, I was like, you know, I had to look it up real quick. But you know what? That's, listen, different actors, they take inspiration from different places. And that's probably the wildest one I've heard yet. I would love to hear if we find any other wild ones.
That, no, for that me, when I heard that, I sent you guys the video, but I was like, I can't wait to talk about this. And it completely slipped my mind throughout the day. And I was like, I need to grab this and get your guys' reaction. It's super interesting.
Now, after we get off of this, I'm going to put some Busta Rhymes songs and Method Man and Redman in the chat. Shane, you will have to listen because I want you to actually pick up on what I'm picking up on. Like, hear the similarities in the voices.
Yeah, and put some Venom in there at the end so he can hear it. Because it is very similar. It's very fascinating.
Yeah.
When we talk about this movie. Actually, Shane, give your rating before we do kind of the last piece here.
First one gets a D+, this one gets a D.
Great. Nothing's going to be lower than that. let's, and Brandon, please chime in on this as well. Let's talk about the comic history of Venom and this character, because this character kind of came out of this random mail that they sent that, you know, the Spider-Man artist got, like, oh, here's this fun character that's an alien. He got paid like $250 for it, which is crazy nowadays. But talk about the history of this character, because he went from a villain to an anti-hero, a guy who eats brains, human brains, and eats chocolate because of the Fenny Lafala line or whatever that thing is. But you were also talking about this in the chat, that this was a very like emo era of Marvel when he came out. So talk about that piece, because I think that's also a very interesting and important way to end this, is talk about the history of this character.
Well, I don't even know if like emo is the right word, but it's just... It's like there was a time like in the kind of 80s and 90s when Marvel was struggling, and they kind of, you know, they took a bit of they went in kind of a dark direction with some of their characters, you know,
a brooding character.
Right. Yes. You know, like Venom, Deadpool, Thanos, just very characters that are very violent in nature. And, you know, none of them are really morally the best people or beings, I guess. And, yeah, and so that was, you know, that was sort of the era it came out in. And I just think Venom is interesting because he's always kind of been like the perfect foil to Peter Parker. And which is why it's weird to me to give him a solo movie without Peter, but whatever.
Thanks, Sony.
Yeah. But so that's kind of like how, you know, Joker is like Batman's perfect opposite. It's, you know, it's the same sort of thing. And and then, you know, over time we've gotten all sorts of different iterations and adaptions and whatnot, but ultimately, you know, it's kind of amazing how quickly he rose in popularity guys like Green Goblin and Doc Ock and the rest of the Sinister Six, and what, you know, who had been these staple characters forever, and he just like kind of fit right in. You know, I think it speaks volumes to kind of just like just how interesting people find him. Because he's, and you know, even today, like, you think of Spider-Man's three greatest enemies, you think Green Goblin, Doc Ock, and Venom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and every, every character has, you know, their three biggest enemies. But none are, you know, maybe quite as iconic as these three. And other than maybe Batman, like his trifecta is like Joker, Penguin, and probably Riddler. But the fact that he's such a new character compared to all those other ones, it speaks volumes about what people, how people feel about it. So, so yeah, I just think that's, it's kind of interesting how he's very new and just kind of when he came onto the scene and how quickly he kind of injected himself into the high ranks of all these other people.
Yeah. Anything to add to that, Brandon?
You know, I was, I had started, you know, my review of the movie talking about how pretty, you know, pretty much how much I love the character of Venom. Like because to me, he's not just, he's not like it. It's weird. It's not a lab experiment. Well, not really, not technically, but like a lot of these superheroes are just like, you know, humans that, you know, something just turns them into a monster or a villain, whatever it is. Like, this is an otherworldly thing. This is an alien, a symbiote, you know, bonding itself with a human, you know, basically like a parasite, pretty much.
And don't call me a parasite.
Yeah. But, you know, that's why I said it. But, you know, like I love, because Venom, the other characters, when you think of villains, not too many characters just fit into being a funny villain or an anti-hero, like, or anything like that, you know, that are actual villains. Like, you know, we talk about Deadpool being an anti-hero, but Deadpool, that's what he is. He's not a good guy or a bad guy. He's always been. But Venom is a bad guy, a bad character that, you know, it's interesting that that the character can take on that anti-hero role so well. Because literally, like, him being the Lethal Protector, that version of Venom is the one that a lot of people love, actually.
I have a comic. I think Venom Lethal Protection, Venom the Lethal Protector, I think number 5 in my collection. That comic strip is really good.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, it is.
I haven't read it. I want to read it. But you know, Venom to me, like, I was always like, you know, loving Spider-Man as much as I did growing up. Like, I remember the first time, very early on, especially being a young, you know, Spider-Man fan. Especially we remember this for me. You know, Rob, I know you got into it later, but you know,
I got into it with the movies. That's how I got into it. Yeah, actually.
But I'm saying, like, you know, you got into it with the later movies, but it's like, but, you know, I remember when the first two with Tobey Maguire came out. I remember when Spider-Man 3 came out, and I was like, oh my god, Black Suit Spider-Man. Oh my god, Venom. Like, I knew as a young kid, I'm like, I want to see Venom. Like, it's...
And they screwed it up badly because who was it? The crap.
There's many reasons.
Not Topher Grace. Why am I? Sam Raimi was like, I don't connect with this character. Why are you making me do this?
Yes, Sam Raimi, what's the guy? Didn't he also work with, like, was that Avi Arad, something like that?
Yeah, Avi Arad wanted it. Yeah,
yeah, but
he ruined Spider-Man, by the way. At least in TV.
Yeah, yeah, but like, I grew up like, the 90s cartoons, the 90s cartoon was, you know, like when we were little, it was only showing reruns, but like, we grew up, like, it was, you know, that cartoon especially was always on TV. I could turn on any channel when I was a little kid, for some reason, like in the mornings, or at night when I got home from school, it was Spider-Man. That was my favorite cartoon growing up, and one of the main constant characters of that whole show, Venom was in quite a few episodes. So, you know, it was it was fun to to watch. Like, we became inundated with Venom very early on because he was still, I mean, especially at that time when we were little kids, was still a very, very new character. It wasn't even, he hadn't even been around for 20 years yet. He'd been around for maybe 15, maybe. So, like, it was something that was still very new. So,
when did you start reading comics?
What happened?
When did you start reading comics?
I kind of around the same time. Like, my neighbor used to get them in the mail. He used to get them in the mail, and he would give them to me because he knew how much of a Spider-Man fan I was, especially when I was 4, 5, 6 years old. He knew that I loved it. So,
yeah, he used to get the old too.
And not
just, I'm
not
by just the way, that's comics. That's the funny part. I'm just now getting into comics because of the movie. Yeah. So I have such a different experience, but I think that's really cool.
I was never a big comic fan, but growing up, like, you know what he used to get me in the mail? The original Amazing Spider-Man comics. The old ones. So I used to have every edition. Maybe not every, but for a kid, I had a lot. I still have some of the copies downstairs. Like, some of them, you know, got beat up over the years and things like that. But there's still maybe 2, 3, or 4 copies I have of The Amazing Spider-Man. Like was it like the 1960s comic, whatever it was? 70s? Like, you would get those in the mail.
Stan Lee days.
I would read those nonstop. And that's why I still keep a copy in my house, or a couple copies, because that's how much that character meant to me. So by extension, Venom means a lot to me, even though Venom wasn't even a thing in those comics, from those comics, that era. But like, the Spider-Man universe always fascinated me, but Venom was always my favorite just character. I was fascinated by, hey, this guy is quite literally larger than life. He is bigger, a lot bigger than Spider-Man. He is, you know, he's an intimidating figure. And I, like, it's funny. I was always scared by, like, different things as a kid. I was never scared by Venom. I was like, every time I saw Venom, I was like, yes, yes, because something's going to go down. So I love the character to death. And I love how, you know, that's why I'm, you know, especially for our generation, we're so, you know, we are pretty much like the first real generation that grew up with having Venom be constantly in our lives as a character. Like, Spider-Man always existed. Batman always existed. You know, Superman always existed. Those characters always existed, you know, since the 40s, 50s, whatever. But Venom, I mean, only became, like, really popular into the 90s. And then when we were little kids. So it was, you know, that character is specifically, it feels like it's for us.
Yeah, for sure.
That's why it's so sad to see it on the big screen not be what we want it to be. They still can't get it right. And it's like, I'm begging them at some point. I love how Tom Hardy has done it. I think he's done well with it. But overall, we need more out of this character than what we've been given.
Yeah, we might get that in the MCU as well, for sure.
The best Venom we've gotten in recent memory is, well, other than the cartoon, in the Spider-Man 2 PS5 game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It wasn't even Eddie Brock.
You know where else I liked it? I don't know if you guys ever played the game, but Ultimate Spider-Man.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I have that game. I love it.
I've heard it's really fun. Really quick, I almost forgot. I want to do a quick thing about Venom's connection to Spider-Man in the MCU. I'm going to talk about a couple rumored things that I've heard through the grapevine about No Way Home in relation to Venom. So, if you guys didn't know, the post-credit scene of Venom Let There Be Carnage and the post-credit scene, obviously, for No Way Home is directed by John Watts. He directed both of those, which I thought was really interesting. Brandon, when I was talking about, we'll talk about Topher Grace Venom for a little bit, you got excited. The 80 billion light years of hive knowledge across universes is in relation to that. It's in relation to this version of Venom, knowing about Topher Grace's Venom dying in that universe. So that's why he licks the screen in that hilarious scene. The initial plan for Venom in No Way Home was he was going to be a big figure in the final battle of that movie. And the biggest thing he was going to do was, you guys remember when Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man gets stabbed by Green Goblin?
Yeah.
So basically what was going to happen is he was going to get stabbed. He was dying. And Venom, that, like, Tom Hardy's Venom, decides to leave Tom Hardy's body and go into Tobey Maguire and save his life. That was kind of going to be the big focus for Venom in that movie. So that
was going to be the payoff, pretty much?
That was going to be a big payoff as to why Venom was potentially going to be in the movie. Obviously, that got changed to whatever they're going to do with Secret Wars. We'll talk more about No Way Home because we have a Spider-Man series planned and a Batman series as well planned by us coming forward, and another one. So I'm doing Spider-Man, Brandon's doing Batman, and Shane's going to do one that I'm really excited about, the movies that you have to watch to be considered.
The seven movies to survive film school.
Which is, so we're each going to spearhead a off-season thing. And we're also doing Christopher Nolan as well. So super excited for that.
You don't call it the seven deadly sins. What do you call it? The seven deadly screen times?
It's fine. But yeah, we did go a little long. We had actually a lot to cover today compared to most days. We are going to be here Tuesday morning Eastern time for Monday Night Football. That's going to be very quick. We're going to go like 15 to 20 minutes on that with that doubleheader. But for Brandon, for Shane, for myself, thank you guys for sticking with us for 2 hours and 17 minutes of this trio. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Yes, sounds good, everybody. Take care.